Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking through Skype all the way from New Zealand to Dr. Stuart Bromhall. She is the author of a teen young adult book titled The Battle for Tomorrow. The book depicts a 16-year-old, the sole caregiver of an invalid mother, leaving her home in Seattle to join the anti-war movement in Washington, D.C. She is arrested for participating in the November 2010 blockade and occupation of the U.S. Capitol and ends up in juvenile hall. We're going to talk with Dr. Bromhall about teens today and the issues that they are, including things like pregnancies, homelessness among the teens, as well as issues of education and sexual orientation. But before we chat, I'd like you to know a little bit about her. Dr. Stuart Jeannie Bromhall is an American-born child, an adolescent psychiatrist, activist, and single mother who closed her 25-year Seattle practice in 2002 and immigrated to New Zealand. She worked as a consultant psychiatrist for the New Zealand National Health Service until her retirement in June of 2010. Since then, she has become a full-time activist and internet journalist author. She writes a left-green feminist political commentary blog called The Most Revolutionary Act at stuartbromhall.com and recently served on the national executive of the Green Party of New Zealand. Her first book, a memoir titled The Most Revolutionary Act, Memoir of an American Refugee, won a 2011 All Books Review Editor's Choice Award. It describes the government harassment related to her activism that led Dr. Bromhall to leave the U.S. The Battle for Tomorrow, the one we're going to be talking about today, is a young adult novel she published in April 2011, received the 2011 Pinnacle Book Achievement Award as well as the 2012 Reader Views Reviewer's Choice Award. Hi, Stuart.
Hello.
Wow, here I am talking to you all the way from New Zealand. I'm so glad that we were able to make this arrangement.
Well, so am I. I would say good morning, but I understand it's afternoon where you're at.
Yes, it is. Well, congratulations on the win.
Oh, yeah, I'm fabulously excited about that. My publisher is really excited, too.
Oh, for sure. And I just want to tell the listeners that Stuart won the Reader Views Literary Awards for first place in the teen young adult category for this particular book, The Battle of Tomorrow. So this is really exciting that we can get to talk to you, too. Now, Stuart, one of the things that our reviewer, 18-year-old Madeline, had said, and I'm going to quote, "At 13, Angie had her first abortion. Now, at 16, she is getting her second abortion." Wow. Is this something that is common within the 13 to 16-year-olds? I mean, are teens really that promiscuous?
Yes, it is. I think you're aware that I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and that's one of the main things I deal with is pregnancy.
Now, you are in New Zealand, but originally from the United States, and so I'm wondering, is there really that much different between the teens in New Zealand as there is in the United States?
Well, the rate of teen pregnancy is actually higher in the U.S. than it is in New Zealand.
Why?
It's easier for teenagers to get access to birth control here.
Really?
Yes.
And much easier than it is here in the United States. So why is it so difficult for teens in the U.S. here to get birth control?
Well, I think it mainly has to do with the nature of the healthcare system.
Uh-huh.
In the United States, everything is private pay. And in New Zealand, we have a national publicly funded healthcare system, and there are some treatment that you pay for privately, but reproductive services and sexual health services for teenagers are all free. They're paid for by the government.
So are things any different? We're going to talk about the United States because it seems that this is, you know, it's an issue, as you're saying, in teen pregnancies. So the teens are very promiscuous, and I'm just wondering, is it really different now in 2012 than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 40 years ago?
Well, I want to clarify something. It's not really a matter of the teens being promiscuous. I think what, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is most teen pregnancy results from sexual contact with men over 18. So it's a situation where an older man is taking advantage of a younger girl.
Really?
Yeah. And so it's not promiscuity.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's a situation where a girl is in a social situation or at a party and she's young and she just has no idea what she's getting into. And if you have somebody over 18 with a girl that's 13, 14, even up to 16 years old, they can very easily be manipulated.
And so tell me more about these men then. Obviously, it is against the law, but obviously this is the last thing in their mind, and sex is obviously their first priority. And so let's just talk about these men.
I don't get to meet the men. I just meet the girls.
And so from the girls, what do you learn about these men?
They're nice, they're charming. The girl is usually lonely. She's having some difficulty with her family. She doesn't feel popular. She enjoys the attention. There's a certain amount of grooming that goes on, you know, where the young person is just showered with attention. They're very special.
Do you find that some of these then have no relationship with a male, like a father figure in their home, or maybe the father is there but emotionally absent?
Well, I would say we're going through a period where fathers are really emotionally absent right now, and I put that down to the economy and to problems in the economy. That very, very often both parents are working. They have to work, and so they're just not available. I mean, many of the parents are working two and three jobs, so they're just not available to meet the emotional needs of their teenagers.
And so when a man then comes on to these girls and showers them with wonderful things and probably gifts and many wonderful words, they get hooked in, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, it's very easy to manipulate a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize there's an agenda there.
Well, I guess that actually does come with maturity, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
What's the thing? It comes from spending time with your parents. You know, if you spend a lot of time with your mother, you know, my mother told me about, you know, not going into a room alone with a man and, you know, da-da-da-da, you know,
uh-huh,
I mean, that was an essential part of my education, you know, but I spent a lot of time with my mother, and my mother was very lucky in that she was able to stay home. She didn't have to work.
Uh-huh. My mother stayed home, too, but those were conversations we never had, and maybe I just come from a different era where, you know, maybe it's no different now, too, that, you know, the parents aren't at home to speak to the teens. So also the other thing here in the U.S., Stuart, there's such a high unemployment rate for the youth, and many of the young people are, you know, facing actually permanent employment, and many of them go to and get all these degrees, but when they come out, there's just nothing for them to do. I understand that there's like quite a high percentage of this.
Yeah, there is. The numbers for between age 16 and 19 is estimated at about 23%.
Uh-huh.
And it's about 13% for age 20 to 24.
You know, that's basically coming to a quarter of the population, basically. So pretty darn close. But I'm wondering, now you said 16 to 19, but are these, like, are you talking about kids that are going to school and having jobs after school and on weekends?
No, I'm talking about kids who have left school and who are trying to get full-time jobs and can't get them.
Okay, at 16. Are these dropouts then?
Well, the problem is you know, our educational system is really getting teenagers as well. And so there's a very high school dropout rate.
Uh-huh.
Because of that.
Do you think that this is in a specific cultural or specific areas, or is this across the board in the U.S.?
I would say it's mainly in public school. I think kids that are lucky enough to go to private school, they have a much, you know, much greater chance of getting engaged with the educational system.
Uh-huh. It does seem like the public school system is lacking, and the emphasis is put on other things, and it seems to me, from what I'm hearing, is it's a lack of funds. Do you believe this too, or, you know, what do you think that is going on?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a serious cutback in educational funding that's been happening for years. There used to be a lot of federal funding for education, and there's very little of that now. And then with all the states, you know, I think all the states except North Dakota are virtually bankrupt, and it's from your states and your local communities that most of your school funding comes from.
What about student loan scams that, you know, because there is no, many of the families just cannot afford, and you were talking earlier that the parents sometimes have to hold down two or three jobs, therefore there is no money for education either, you know, from the home base. And I want to address the student loan scam.
When I was in medical school, I was I think I was able to borrow something like $50,000 or $60,000, and like at a really low rate of interest, like at 2 or 3%. You know, the other thing was is that I went to a private medical school, and they were really concerned about my level of indebtedness. So when I reached a certain level of indebtedness, they gave me grants. They didn't want me to borrow too much money.
Mm-hmm.
But now most of the, you know, people borrowing on a student loan, they're paying commercial rates of interest, 8 or 9%. There was a law passed about 6 or 7 years ago that you no longer have bankruptcy protection for a student loan.
Right.
Yeah, so if you come out of college and you can't get a job, you can't get rid of that loan by declaring bankruptcy, and you can't be forgiven the loan if you become permanently disabled and unable to work.
And I think the only time that it is forgiven is when you die.
That's right.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Sam talking with Stuart Bromhoff. She is the author of The Battle for Tomorrow. Interesting, isn't it? Although we hear much about teens in the news, do we really realize all the issues that they have to contend with? Stay tuned, because there's just so much more that we're going to talk to Stuart about.
Yeah, I worked with a couple of people with the Department of Education. You know, people that had been on Social Security disability for years, and just like 12 months worth of correspondence we were able to get. You know, they were actually deducting the student loan out of their Social Security disability check.
Yeah.
You know, which is very low to start out with. But, you know, if you get a doctor who's really willing to support you, then sometimes you can get it forgiven. But it's very, very difficult.
Which, you know, it just it certainly doesn't help. And so, you know, some of the kids, they don't want to get into debt. They don't want those loans. And yet, on the other hand, without the education, they become unemployed.
That's true.
You know, it's one of those catch-22s. Now, I want to talk a little bit about homelessness, too, in the teens, and that seems to be escalating. I'm hearing more and more where teens are living on streets. Like, what is going on?
I think it's really unfortunate that the U.S., there's some third world countries that have a lower rate of teen homelessness than the United States does. I think a lot of it has to do with the economy and just the breakdown in families. You know, they do studies and they find that about 50% of homeless teenagers are there on the street because of conflicts with their parents.
And, of course, this is probably, like you say, caused with the economy. And when there is financial issues in the home, it becomes extremely stressful. Yeah, and, you know, as teens, when I remember and myself and raising our own children, that it's a very confusing time of life anyway. And to add all these stressors on top of that, it's not much wonder that the kids do leave home because they can't cope.
Well, a lot of them will make suicide attempts.
Yes.
But unfortunately, sometimes they're successful.
Yeah, yeah.
When they break that number down with the conflict with their parents, they find that about 40% of them is because of their sexual orientation, they're gay, and the parents refuse to accept that. And then another 25% have a history of being sexually abused by their parents.
Mm-hmm. That's a high percentage.
Yeah.
And that's documented, and how many is not, you know, are not documented?
Yeah.
Yeah. You talked about sexual orientation, and that seems to be a very high rate in suicide when sexual orientation is not accepted by the parents or the culture that they're in or, you know, the society that child lives in. And I just find that very heart-wrenching.
It is. You know, fortunately, you know, among people, you know, under age 30, people who are lesbian, gay, or transgendered are more likely to be accepted. So the younger generation of the culture seems to be accepting it more. So that's a really good sign.
Yes, it is. But if this child does not have support from their own family or their own community, you know, they just have to be double strong to be able to leave and go into a community that does accept them. And gosh, as a teen, that's a tough one.
You know, there's a lot of girls who wind up on the streets because they're pregnant and their parents don't accept it.
Yeah, exactly.
And just kick them out.
And, you know, I just think that a lot of that is just, it's the parents' own issues and their own stresses, and they just don't know how to cope with it.
Yeah, I would say that it relates to stress.
Mm-hmm.
And my impression is probably that the financial downturn started before 2008. That I started noticing around 2005, you know, and a lot of my colleagues in the United States did, that families were just really struggling financially. And during that time, that's when we started seeing a whole lot of teenagers who were suicidal or who were cutting themselves. That seems to happen quite a lot now, that instead of actually making a suicide attempt, the teenagers will cut themselves on their arms.
Yeah, it's such a cry for help. It's such a cry for help, and it's an attempt. And I think it's, of course, as we both know, it's an attempt for attention. And unfortunately, a lot of parents don't see it as that. So in your book, Angie turns to activism. She really sees a need. And is this sort of a trend that's happening with the teens right now?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, there are some teens that are turning to activism. The way I tried to portray it in the book was that it was mostly this relationship with this much older man. You know, she's like 15 and dating a 23-year-old man. I tried to make it clear that it happened in the context of that relationship, because there is clearly some manipulation going on.
Right, right.
In terms of the older man, he's recruiting her. Yeah, he's recruiting her to his political point of view, and I think people who do become involved in activism, I think they are recruited.
Yes, of course. It would be no different than being recruited for sex, as we talked about earlier, or religious affiliation, or any other cause. I certainly agree with you. Now, when you wrote The Battle for Tomorrow, were you actually using some life experiences of teens that you knew?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was based on teens that I'd worked with, and to some extent on my own family experiences growing up.
And obviously, your book is so well accepted. Do you find that the age group that you targeted, the upper teens and young adult, can they relate to your story?
Yeah, I haven't had too many young people review it, and that's why I was really happy, to have an 18-year-old review it, because it was really good to get her take on it. And I think they gave it to a 15-year-old reviewer on another website.
Uh-huh.
And both of them mentioned in the review that they didn't necessarily agree with the political views expressed, but it did kind of remind them that they should become more involved with what was happening in society. So I was very pleased, to get that feedback.
Yeah, of course. That's great. Obviously, there was an underlying message in the book, and these two teens got it.
That's right. And, my point of view has always been is that it doesn't really matter how you become involved.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was 15, my mother was really active in the Republican Party, and so I organized a bunch of kids from my high school class to leaflet this one shopping center for this Republican congressman who was running, and then a year later I went door-to-door for Barry Goldwater. I feel that that was a really, really important, part of my development.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it taught me that there was more to life than just getting my immediate needs met.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Wow. Congratulations again on this award. And what I'd like you to do, Stuart, is tell our listening audience your website address.
Okay, it's stuartbramhall.com. stuartbramhall.com.
Great. And, gosh, thank you so much for coming online here and having the interview. And, talking to somebody from New Zealand, this is really great. And I'm really grateful that we were able to connect and be able to do this. And thank you very much.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
And listeners, we were just talking to Dr. Stuart Bramhall, and her book, as I had mentioned earlier, is The Battle for Tomorrow. I really encourage you to read it, and although it is fictional, I'm sure that you're going to get some insight on the workings of teens today. And as we had also mentioned, that she had two teens that had reviewed her book, and although they didn't agree with some of the political leanings, which is good because at least that they had their own opinions, I think that they both got something out of this. So I do encourage you again. It's The Battle for Tomorrow by Stuart Bromhall. And thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.